bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting. Hello, welcome to the Photo Show. Yes, we're here to discuss the week's photography news and answer your questions. A couple of which have been very good this week, it has to be said. Joining me to go through the whole lot is the usual esteemed panel, starting off with Mr. Chris Forsman. How you doing, Pat?
Morning.
Morning. You've got an appointment
here
today,
in Chicago.
I gather.
What's that?
You have an appointment today, I gather.
I do have an appointment this morning with Nokia.
So. Oh, what are you talking about?
So you heard about their new maps. They call it Here. They rebranded their mapping service.
Right.
From Ovi. Earlier this week.
From Ovi. And,
right. And so they're going to take me on a drive around Chicago with the cars they use to gather the data.
Cool.
Apparently has LiDAR installed on top. So that's very exciting.
Are you taking a camera?
Lasers. I haven't really decided. I imagine I'll end up using my iPhone, as I tend to do, because I'll take a lot of Instagrams and post them right away, but I'll have my Olympus with me, too, just in case.
Jolly good. Jolly good. Next to him, Mr. Fox. How you doing, pal?
I'm okay. I'm not going out anywhere in a car.
No.
Moving around.
That isn't a Christmas decoration up behind you, is it, I hope?
Yeah, but the point of that Christmas decoration, it's been there for 4 or 5 years now.
A, you don't celebrate Christmas.
Wait, there's a point to it?
I do celebrate Christmas. No, that Christmas decoration, there's one on nearly every door in the house, actually, that we just leave up. And it's like a joke that started about 5 years ago, and there's still a Christmas decoration on every door in the house. So it never gets taken down.
You've got your Christmas decorations up.
Yeah.
I'll have to go back through old footage of the shows and see if it's there.
It's always there.
It's always there. I've only just noticed. There. Maybe, yeah, just turn on because it's the Christmas season.
Yeah, you've actually bothered to look at the screen.
Ho, 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 children.
Chris, why don't you ask them to bring one of the Nokia phone camera things and you can do a double review while you're out?
I bothered the PR person about it and she said she's shipping me one today.
There you go. Hopefully it'll get there before you go.
Ask for a tracking number. Don't believe her until she gives you the tracking number. Straight in with it then. Nikon have got a lens that's relatively new. I mean, we're not hot on the money here. It's a 10-24 f3.5-4.5. And there's a review of it. That's the thing that we're really interested in. The price of this thing, they reckon, is going to be £679 to $799 if you want it. 10-24. First impressions, fellas?
The review suggests it's a decent lens. You know, it's not gonna fill out any kind of professional kit, but for the money that you'll spend on this, you'll get a pretty wide angle view.
Yeah.
My only concern really is the chromatic aberrations that it has, but I think a lot of lenses at these extreme angles and at this price range tend to have the same problem. So, you know, I think it's kind of one of those things you can fix a lot in post with the new, you know, the lens. Profiling they do now.
So is the DX crop only, or is that full frame as well?
I believe the DX lens is crop only.
Crop only, right.
Well, you say crop only. That's not quite true. It's you can use it on a full frame.
Right, right. Most of the Nikon full frames will do a special DX mode when you pop in one of those lenses and just uses the central part of the sensor.
Right, because normally the problem with using crop sensors on full frames is the fact that you get the bayonet is a different size, so therefore the depth of the bayonet causes problems with the shutter release. So you're saying that's not the case on the Nikons?
No, what they do to get around this is, the other way around, as we know, you get the multiplier in millimetres of the lens. But this way to get around it, as Chris says, they only use a proportion of the sensor. So you'll get 10 mil. But if you've got it on a D800, you'll get about a 20 megapixel camera rather than a 36. So it does absolutely nothing to the picture itself. It just uses a smaller proportion of the sensor.
Right.
But with today's sensors being so high, you just end up with a smaller output, but you end up with an identical use of the lens just on a smaller output.
Mm-hmm. Right, okay. Good price, or do you think they've got an issue now where they're starting to get a bit of overlap with these with other models in the range?
Well, at this end of the market, there isn't anything else there really, other than they do vastly more expensive lenses that aren't 3.5 to 4.5, but you're going to pay money for this purely on the fact that they're not going to make very many of them. And I think this is possibly aimed at, estate agent type people that need to do internal shots, but they're not going to be doing it with the full kit, the full shebang, the very high-end camera and the lighting systems and all the rest of it. So this is, if you like, it's a compromise. It's an ability to use a, lower than $2,000 camera, but still be able to get the shot. So you can use your decent-ish camera rather than having to use a point and shoot handheld, cyber shot or something like that.
Mm.
It's their way of being able to give people the usefulness on lower end cameras. And I think it's a good idea because of, as a business expense, $800 and the longevity of the equipment that you already own, that you understand and all the rest of it is going to carry on. I can see estate agents and people that, you take nice indoor shots, but they're not there to be professional indoor shots. I can see this being a useful camera.
Is it a low light architectural lens?
Well, not at that price, it isn't. It's certainly not low light, but it is architectural, I suppose.
In joke. Right, okay, this, it's not exactly competition because it's a fixed mil, 35mm lens, but Sigma have brought out a 35mm 1.4, and this is going to retail for about £800, so it's going to knock you the best part of $1,200 probably. A bit outpriced or well worth the money?
That's probably in line with maybe even a little bit less expensive. I'm trying to look it up here because I know I have the Canon 35mm 1.4L on my wish list in here. But on first blush, I feel like that price seems pretty reasonable. Just going to double check here.
Nope. Any thoughts, Alex, while he double checks?
No, I think price-wise, I think it's about right. I mean, you're not going to... A 1.4 lens is going to cost you.
Yeah.
That's just the fact.
Yeah.
I quite like the design of it as well. I quite like the simplicity of it. One of the things I don't like about Nikon lenses, I think they're incredibly ugly. And I think...
it's a Sigma, though, so...
Yeah, so I'm saying that. I mean, I think Canon make the best-looking lenses, and I think this is getting towards that.
Oh, really? It's very plain, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think that's what you really need. You know, there's too much on the outside of Nikon lenses. There's too much. I mean, quite often I knock my lens and I'll knock it from one thing. I'll knock the VR on, or I'll knock this, and this looks plain and simple. This, I mean, maybe it's just a fashion thing, but I quite like the way this looks.
It does look good.
Yeah, it does look pretty sharp.
Mm.
Canon's 35mm 1.4 is $2,400 retail, although I'm seeing a price right now on Amazon of a little over $1,300. So I imagine the Sigma will probably sell for about $1,000. Maybe less. Depends. Mm. Depends. The 35mm 1.4 Canon's been out a couple of years, so prices tend to drop a little bit.
Cool. Now the last one that we've got in this kind of brand range, although we can talk about the Zeiss in a little bit if you want, is the Sam-I-Am T15 85mm. This has got a lot more old school kind of feel and look to it, definitely compared to the other ones. If you're doing manual focus, you're probably able to put some of your extension pieces onto so you got a focus arm on the front end of this. I'm trying to desperately look through the story here and find out what the price is, but I can't see a price at all.
No, I read this earlier and I don't remember reading
it.
I don't want to be rude about the article, but I think it's aimed at video on DSLRs.
Yeah, that's where I get the idea with the focus ring being very heavily knurled, so that you can put one of those. I've got one of them here. If I just pick it up, you can add in your own focus ring.
Sure. So, and I also think
these things just
the largeness of the aperture ring as well. And it seems to be, you can really sort of definitely make sure you're f/2.5 or whatever it is you want it set to. And it seems to be built for that. And it did say something in here about, it's been designed to be able to work with the tracking autofocus. So what basically means you have a continual autofocus when you're using video and you're moving around with it. So it will be refocusing on autofocus whilst you're moving.
Mm.
So it's got a tracking point and the way that works.
Which I've got to say scares the hell out of me. I just really don't trust anything that's tracking autofocus, never have.
Yeah. Well, and you're right, Ewan, that those large knurls on the aperture and focus ring are, you know, when you have those special rigs with the big attachments for, you know, so basically someone can be moving around and pointing the camera, and then another operator will be right there beside them, like making fine adjustments to the focus and stuff, yeah, like while they're working.
It's an interesting 1.585 mil. It's a, you know, it's funny. It's not something you see as a photographer. I mean, the video guys will probably go, "Yeah, well, yeah, you know, standard. That's what we do." But you know, 85 mil rings a bell, and you know, I can see, you know, that being a standard fit of a lens. But
what kind of price are we going to go? Are we going to drop our trousers? And at what kind of price are we going to say, "Nah, keep it"?
Well, do you know what? It's a video lens, so double it.
Yeah.
Whatever you were thinking of, double it.
Thieving bastards.
Yeah, but you know, that's the thing. You know what? The way they're sort of making all these companies are making their money back in years to, you know, not that long ago, you bought a video equipment, and you know, it made your camera equipment look like it was a free giveaway with a packet of crisps. You know, it was that sort of thing. But now, I mean, obviously they lost a fortune when you could use DSLRs at $2,000 to be able to make a video. And this is, it looks to me, this is their way of starting to claw back the money.
Mm.
You know, I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll make them a lens that sits on their, you know, D800 or whatever. And
it's true.
It's going to be three times the price that they paid for the camera.
Yeah, I mean, that's very true. I mean, you've got the situation now where a lot of people are shooting professional quality videos. I'll stand up and say I am as well, with a DSLR. And they're going to go, "Oh, this is a great lens for video." And they're looking to try and expose that as the market now. And as you say, it's a particularly profitable market as well.
Yeah. I mean, you know very well. I mean, a day's video shoot can bring in, you know, an awful lot more on a day's camera shoot.
I thought you were going to give me a figure then, and I could go, it?
No, but the thing is, with a day's camera shooting, you know, in general, you know, the job is done with a day. With video, there's so many other things going on around you. So a video shoot, you know, you're talking about you've got to book 2 or 3 days to make sure the job's done right.
Yeah, yeah.
With a camera shoot, you normally got a studio or an object or whatever you're doing, and you know, you're in control. There's so many other variables with video shoots.
Well, I mean, you saw the video that I shot the other week, and that's 4 days of editing into that.
Yeah. Just to, now I did tell you and I would embarrass him, but
No.
I met up with Ewan the other day, and him and another dear fella of the network showed me some video they did. And I wasn't being rude, but I did instantly turn around and said, "Did you two really do this?" Because it was incredible. It really was very, very, very professional. And, you know, the way he's matter-of-fact about, you know, I popped out, I did a video, and I knocked it together, and I'm like, I was expecting something akin to, you know, you get from the Christmas show at school. But this was serious, high-end, professional, and I just wanted to let everyone know that wonders how professional.
I actually do put food on the table by taking pictures. Thanks,
yeah,
mate.
But, you know, the question, are you like professionals? Well, Ewan can prove it. I'm not sure about the other, us two, but Ewan can now prove it.
I got paid for it. Well, no, I haven't got paid for it yet, so no.
He's a charity instead.
And the last one is Zeiss. Zeiss has pulled out this offering, which, as you might expect, is probably fairly expensive. I'm just trying to find the bloody story on it now, and I've lost it. I had it, and now it's gone. Zeiss, this is probably, what, 20K, 12K, 15K?
Which lens? There's a 15mm 2.8 that is...
Yeah, it's 7. 2000? Yeah, 7. This one's the 2.8 15mm one, the picture that we're showing here. And there's also...
$3,000, looks like.
Yeah, there's a 135, and there's a whole pile of them. 7 of them coming out in the next 30 days, if you want to go and buy them. And, man, they're beautiful lenses, though. I've never had a go with a Zeiss lens. I've held one, but I've never had one on a camera. And they feel really well made, which I'm sure they should. But
yeah, especially for the price. But I think what's interesting about these is that they, you know, they come in a Nikon and Canon mount, and they also come in the old school 42mm screw mount.
Well, they've already embraced the Canon, haven't they?
Yeah, but the thing that I find interesting is that they're manual. These are old school manual focus lenses, like heavy metal barrels and everything. So it's almost like you can have your fancy brand new 40 bajillion megapixel DSLR, you know, the height of electronics, but then you still get that feel of, you know, using a manual, you know, old school lens on it. And yeah, it's almost kind of like the best of both worlds, I think, for some photographers in particular. I think they're going to really appreciate that.
This is going to sound really stupid, but I'm going back 30 years now. I was 14, 15 years old. I'd got a knackered old Pentax that I'd been given by an uncle, and I'd bought for myself out of my pocket money from a local shop, a Senton lens. Senton. Mm. I don't know if do you have Senton in the US?
I've heard of that, but I don't think I've ever seen one.
But this thing was, it was 100mm lens fixed, and it was made out of metal, and the barrel was, and this thing was hugely heavy.
You need a cranking handle,
and
guys.
It cost me, I'm going back 30 years, this thing had cost me £80 when I bought it brand new, and from a place up in Birmingham. And I remember the first time I had a go with a Zeiss lens, it felt like the old Senton lens. The Senton lens was £85, you know, it's not comparable in the slightest, but there's something missing in that I want a lens that feels like if I drop it, I'm going to break a toe. And you don't get that anymore unless you're buying, you know, the high-end beige lenses from Canon and that kind of stuff, or the equivalent from Nikon, perhaps.
I used to have a Vivitar. Used to have these lenses they call their Series 1, which were like, they were like that. They were just like all metal barrels, heavy, thick glass, you know, large apertures. And it was exactly like that. I mean, it just felt, even though Vivitar has kind of always been somewhat of like a budget brand, at least, you know, beyond the 70s, it certainly was considered that. And but this lens felt like serious business.
That's what you need. You need a lens that can break a toe.
Right?
There we go.
Some of the lenses I use on the plate cameras, I'll just let people know. Basically, you got a big box, as you saw in the old days, and you got a front plate with a hole in it. And your lens, there's a screw on the back and a screw on the front, and you put it through the hole and you screw it together. And all it basically has got is an aperture ring on it. That's it. There is nothing else on it. I don't even use the timed exposure. I open it by hand and I pull my slide cover off of the front and I count to 4 seconds normally and I put the slide cover back on and then I click it off again. So absolutely, there's no focus on it because the focus is done with the bellows of the box and stuff like that. But these things, when you take them off, it's quite amazing how heavy just a lump of glass and a lump of metal actually is. Because with these things, there's no attempt whatsoever to make them lighter or anything else. They have just got to be absolutely solid, robust, and, you know, unbreakable, which incidentally they're not, because I'm forever putting dinks in them. Mm. But funnily enough, when you do drop them, you'll get a really big dent in the side of the things, but it won't affect it.
Yeah, unless you do it on one of the rings, and then you get like a little V appears in the ring and it puts a score around the outside. Did that?
You're a bit screwed. Undoubtedly, that's a bit screwed.
No, my Senton had a score all the way around from where I dinked the frame.
But, you know, like I say, they still make lenses like that. I mean, fair enough, there's not that many of us that buy them.
No.
But, you know, there are lenses out there now that are as you remember. But, then, you know, there's no, you know, what's the one I use? I've got a 105 on there at the moment. And that's only because I can't be bothered to change it. It doesn't make much difference to me. I just move closer or further away. But, there are lenses out there now without any of the fuss. But the beauty of these lenses, you know, the actual physical front of them are enormous. Mm. There's no depth to them whatsoever. And there's nothing in there interfering. You know, there's not 700 different, you know, plates of glass doing various different things to, you know, bend the light by a fraction of a billionth of a millimeter to a different area. It's, you know, it's a glorified metal tube with an aperture ring on the front, but, you know, precision built. And, you know, don't drop them on your toe. They won't bounce. They go through the floor.
And we're going to get loads of letters about how the fact we only love Canon and Nikon and don't do anything else, but just to be fair, all things considered, if you are an Olympus shooter and you like your Micro Four Thirds, then there's a nice little lens out, 17mm f1.8, and it's going to cost you $500, so around £350. And it's coming in December, allegedly, to fit onto your front of your Olympus stuff.
Yeah, this is for the street shooters out there.
Yeah, talk us through it then, Chris.
Well, you know, you've got the 1.8 aperture, and the equivalent focal length is pretty close to 35 millimeter, which is the classic street photography focal length. So, you know, you've got wide open aperture for shooting in all kinds of lighting situations. It's the kind of you just pop it on there and you walk around, you know, you walk around downtown or around your neighborhood and just shoot away. That kind of lens. So I've got an old, oh, it's in the other room, but I've got an old Rolly 35B. This sort of, you know, it reminds me of this because it's small, it's light, you got your single focal length, you just adjust your aperture and you know, I would set the camera to aperture priority and just go.
Yeah, away you go. Yeah. What about the price, Alex? Any thoughts around the spec and the price marrying up? 500, it seems quite dear considering it's going on a Micro Four Thirds and
That's the issue, isn't it? I mean, so what I said before about the Nikon lens, you know, they've got they've got a lens. They're not going to sell very many of them, you know. And the spec isn't stupidly high to make it too expensive, but it's going to go on a relatively cheap camera. And that's my only. It's not even an objection. It's if you're going to spend. I don't know what a Micro Four Thirds Olympus costs, but it's not an extraordinarily large amount of money. I just think there's a maximum that you can push the cost of a lens to. And it's all very well because I'm sure they can make some fantastic lenses, but if you're going to make a lens that's going to cost you more than the camera, you possibly you've got to possibly
that old chestnut.
Yeah, but you've got to think about who your client is.
Well,
you know, I think
who's going to be buying this lens isn't the person buying like the super low end Olympus Four Thirds. This is people who are buying like you know the OMD cameras or like the Panasonic GX2 or whatever. You know, I mean these bodies are closer to $1,000, but you're also talking about the people who buy these sort of cameras understand that you can buy a lens that's worth more than the camera, and there's a reason you do that. You know, you're the kind of person that's who would be interested in this lens isn't the kind of person who's going to get the low end Olympus with the kit zoom and that's it.
No, I appreciate that, and I sort of think you know I do count myself as someone that knows a little bit about photography. I think maybe. You know what? Yeah, just a tiny bit. You know, I know how to open the box. But I can, you know, for me, I say, yeah, well, you know, buy a lens that's more expensive than your camera because even when you want to get rid of the camera, there's, you know, you got your lenses.
That's where the investment should be, yeah.
Yeah, but I'm just thinking about the type of person, and it's really sort of, you know, going across the board, but, you know, the majority of people that would buy a Four Thirds camera these days would see it and they'd actually balk at the price. They'd be going like, whoa, that's nearly as much as I paid for the camera. And I just think, you know, it's a case of knowing your market. And I just wonder if some of these, because it can be done, I just wonder how sensible it is that they are doing it. You know, with so many camera companies and, you know, the Kodaks and people like that getting in so much trouble and basically obliterating themselves. I'm very conscious that I don't want anyone else to go down the fall down the trap of having great ideas, but it's those ideas that end up bankrupting you. And I'm sort of one for, you know, make professional equipment at the professional end, but make not mediocre but cheaper equipment. I mean, that's why I like things like Sigma. Sigma to me are the company that balances the two things really well. You can get higher.
It never used to be that way though.
No, they were cheap and crap. Yeah. But now they're like, you can get high-ish specs and you do pay the money, but not the top end for it.
Mm.
And, you know, it's almost like now, if I had a Sigma lens, if I had turned up at a professional job, I'd have done everything for people not to see that I had a Sigma lens. If I could have put a bit of black tape around the word Sigma, I would have done. But now I don't. And I just don't want any other companies to get themselves in trouble because by the end of it, people might moan about us just talking about Nikon and Canon, but if it carries on the way it's going, it might be all there is left to talk about.
Yeah, I think the other thing you've got to watch out for as well is when you buy your lenses, buy things that are going to give you artistic flexibility as well. Don't look at this lens and go, oh, it's 500 quid, therefore it must be good. What you're really buying here is the wider angle at 17 millimeters and the f1.8 that'll give you great depth of field. You're going to get in nice and get good close-ups of things here with loads of stuff in the background to frame it or fill the frame with interest from very close range. you're going to be in everyone else's photos that's trying to take pictures of the monument or the architecture that you're near. And the video that Alex was talking about, that was shot with a 600D and the Canon 50mm 1.8 lens at £90.
I mean, that's begging the question, because, you know, as you were talking, I was thinking, okay, well, you want the artistic ability of a lens. Right, I'll just ask you too, off the top of your head, what is your priority? Would you say, like, if I was going to spend $1,000 on a lens, would it be the variation in focal length that would be your number one concern, or would it be your aperture variation that would be your number one concern? If you could prioritize one over the other, what would it be?
Aperture.
Aperture.
Yeah, exactly the same here, aperture. But I would have said that when people go into a shop that aren't professionals, they look at, that does 24 to 300. That's got to be better.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And that is the point. You can always move closer, but you can't change your depth of field.
Yeah, I think one of the things that we've done on this show is not try and focus at professionals and not try and focus at amateurs. It's been a kind of, here's something that's a little bit more technical, you can gravitate towards it, and here's something that's fundamentally really basic. And I think when we first started this show 2.5 years ago, Chris, certainly when you came along, we were talking about, look, it's not about the megapixels, and people have got that message now. And yeah. I think also, you know, one of the things we've been hammering on for the last 12 months is, if you want to buy a 24mm to 300mm lens, bear in mind, from 200mm onwards, it's a pointless exercise. It's soft focus. It's never going to be sharp. You know, don't buy things that have got vast focal ranges. And we've been saying repeatedly, and I always say it, we've got a question today that's going to come up with this. You know, if I've got £100 burning a hole in my pocket, should I put it towards something really expensive, or should I go out and buy the Canon or the Nikon f1.8 50mm fixed lens? Go out and buy that, because that will give you the ability to get off your ass and go and shoot stuff that everyone goes wow at. And people look at the images that I shoot. I've got a great body for stills, don't get me wrong. It makes a big difference. But
you want to hear that back? That
yeah, sense. I'll listen to that again. But the point is that the aperture at f1.8 on the lens that I stick on that £6,000 camera is what people go wow at, because people love depth of field. They love control of depth of field in images, and they expect professionals to control depth of field in images. That's what sets you apart. If you're shooting a flat painting, Alex, you haven't got a chance. But I mean, yeah, your professional comes from sharpness and quality and that kind of stuff. Whereas for me, people have to look at a piece of engineering and go, that's great, because it's set back against the backdrop of a blurred part of the machine from behind that makes it really, you know, really emphasizes that bit that you did want in focus. And yeah, learn your depths of field and buy lenses that will help you control depths of field. That's how you look better.
Yeah, I'm glad I asked the question. Yeah.
There you go. That's question one then. Question two. I don't know what else to cover. There's one that interested me. Go on, Chris.
I was going to say, maybe we should get to the questions, because you said they were pretty interesting, and maybe...
They are, actually, and you've got to go and ride around the town with Nokia. So let's start the questions then. Question one, why does the camera add 10 pounds? If you meet people who've been on TV, they genuinely look smaller and thinner. What's the reality of lenses, etc.? Thank you. Andrew Bailey, I think that's possibly the best question we've ever had. Why does the camera add 10 pounds?
Does it? Does it really add 10 pounds, or is it just people's perception?
Well, okay. Well, go on. What do we think?
I mean, does it actually, do TV camera lenses alter the geometry of what they're, you know, capturing, or is it just the way, I don't know.
Well, I guess the question is, why do people look like they're 10 pounds heavier on TV or in cameras?
I mean, I've never felt that people look heavier in still images. I'm honestly people always say that, but I've never noticed it. So I've never even thought about it.
Alex, you got any thoughts?
Well, I do it. I mean, I do tricks with various photography to try and avoid this when I'm shooting sculpture. And what it is for me is to do with a first of all, you're talking about a mono view. You're talking about one lens rather than the stereoscopic lenses with your eye. And when you've got stereoscopic lenses, you can see a depth to somebody. And I think when you see a depth to somebody, you can see the roundness of them rather than more of a silhouette. So when you can see the roundness of someone, you get lighter edges around the outside, which then sort of blur slightly around the edges. And when you, in real life, people, you see the subtleties of their shape diminishing as they go away from you. And so, you know, you can see that people are not solid objects. And one of the things with that, and also lighting from front on, which you generally get a lot more forward lighting and contrast in photography as you do in real life, is you've got that same effect. You've got almost, you've silhouetted something against the background. So therefore they become solid. They look heavier. They look more, they're taking up all of that space rather than when you see it with your own two eyes and you've got the movement of, you know, people in front of you. When they move, you see the subtleties of the edges of their bodies and it blends away, it blurs away as it truly is. But in any photograph or any film, they are a solid object. In film, you might have 29 frames a second or whatever it is, but they're still solid for every 29 frames per second. But in real life, they're not solid at all. They're moving and they're flying. So you can see the contours of their edges and you can see the way they're, you know, disappearing in the distance. A good example is if you light something, I mean, I do it with sculpture sometimes. If I light from left and right, parallel to them, the light that hits their edges actually make them look a lot narrower. You can make something a lot thinner by lighting them evenly, but you know, right on 90 degrees from left and right, and it actually gives the impression of someone being a lot narrower. There's a film, an advert for a film, and it might be a very old film, and it's a bit like the ET thing. You know, when there's a film advert with a picture of somebody, and it's so harshly lit in silhouette from left and right that you only actually see the middle core of this person. The outer core of this person is sort of whited out. So they actually only look 6 inches wide in the middle, and the rest of it, your brain knows, is an optical illusion, and they are there. It's just so brightly lit that they're burning out. And it's the opposite with, if you like, from the front. You make a silhouette and you lose the depth of the contour of their sides.
I'd have agreed. I mean, I think the camera doesn't make people look 10 pounds heavier. I think lighting makes people look 10 pounds heavier. And one of the things that you'll find with TVs particularly and filming and that kind of thing is that they tend to shove an awful lot of light on subjects, which makes them flatter and less round, as Alex says there. So you lose the subtlety of the depth of the person as a result. Excuse me. Cut yourself two circles out, one black, one white, and paste them on a wall and tell me which one looks bigger. And the white one always looks bigger. So if you're over-illuminated, you will appear bigger than if you are under-illuminated. And that's the long and the short of it. Excuse me. I do apologise. I'm not well at the minute.
But I mean, a good trick to do, actually, to make people look smaller is if you shoot... If you've got a pretty girl and you want to take a picture of a party and you want them to be flattering, shoot them with a white wall around them, because what that does, that helps them blend away into the background and it softens their edges and therefore makes not only their face but their body and everything else look narrower. If you shoot someone against something harsh like black, all of a sudden it's like going to the cinema and seeing one of those cardboard cutouts standing there and they look solid and bulky and you'll add weight and you're emphasized there. The lines in their eyes and the lines in their face. So use the subtlety of bouncing something off a white wall and then you'll be a lot more popular with the person you photographed.
People that meet me always think I'm fatter in person than I am in real podcasts. So. And the reason is I shoot from above, you see. The camera eye line is up here.
Got to get one of those new
cameras here
Logitech.
On me.
Let's do Logitech.
Logitech
camera.
C910.
It's a Facebook perfect. Angle.
Question two. Hi, Ewan and the guys. 18 months ago, I bought a Canon 550, which I use for video and stills, mainly in the summer, when I spend several months in the south of France. You lucky git, John. My question is, I'm using the kit lens, the 18-55, and after listening to your podcast last week, wondered if I should buy the 50mm prime. Or would you make any other suggestions, bearing in mind it's not a full-size sensor? I shoot landscapes and portrait and also enjoy taking low light. Great podcast. Keep up the good work. John of Chesterfield. Thank you, John of Chesterfield. Right then, fellas, what's our advice to John? The 18-55 lens... certainly when you crank it back, that's 3.5 to 5.6, I think. I haven't checked.
Yeah.
I mean, that's reasonable. 3.5 is okay in low light. You'll do reasonably well with that as long as you're all the way screwed back in. 55mm at 5.6 isn't particularly friendly. But the lens is worth keeping. I think that, you know, you get away with those. And a lot of those, they come with a kind of built-in pseudo macro, don't they, where they'll do very close focus. It's not macro, but it's close enough. What about the prime lens over changing the camera? I mean, the 5500 is 720p, is that right? It's not 1080?
Couldn't tell you.
I think it's 720. Not sure. I've got it in my head, it's 720. But even if but not.
The two things that he said, well, three, I guess, landscapes, portrait, and low light. So a 50 millimeter f1.8 for Canon, it's going to cost you $100 US new. You can get them for $50 to $60 used.
It's on a crop sensor as well, so it's 75 mil effective.
It's kind of like a medium telephoto, great for head and shoulders type stuff. You have the 1.8 aperture, it was great for low light. I was using mine the other day on a crop sensor camera to do some product shots for my Retina MacBook Pro review, and they came out really great. And for landscapes, you know, I would suggest maybe a fixed focal length, a 24, a 28, a 35. Canon makes quite a variety. We talked about Sigma has a nice fancy one you can get. But look for a fixed focal length. And there's so many available used that you should be able to find a decent price on them, around a couple $100 maybe.
Cool.
So I'd suggest maybe a 24, a 28, or 35, whichever you like more for your landscape stuff, and that'd be it. I'd stick with that for the time being.
So you're not advocating the 50 mil, or you are?
Oh, I am, definitely. Yeah.
Definitely.
I mean,
yeah.
Every SLR user should buy one. And if you have a crop sensor camera, I mean, you can consider some of the company Nikon, I think, makes a 30 millimeter that's sort of like a short prime that are, you know, inexpensive, but they're so inexpensive and they're so versatile. It's just, you know, it's like I harken back to my, you know, photography school days. You know, the first thing you do is you have a fixed focal length 50, and it's just like you have to do all your projects. Every assignment has to be done with this lens. So you learn to get really creative. And I think, you know, for the money, it's absolutely worth it. For the versatility, it's worth it. And for the, you know, the kind of, you know, it gives you some constraints. You just have to like think a different way with it. And that is also a benefit, really a side benefit.
I've just done a quick check. And as far as I can find out, the specs on the 550D are showing it as full HD. So it's 1080p, 3.7 frames a second. And whether that was true of the older one, maybe that's where I've got it in my head, but I'm wrong. Alex, what do you suggest for John?
I always like having a lens I really know well, and I really like a really good fixed prime lens. I think for things like landscape, a landscape doesn't tend to be the thing that you set out to, you know, I'm going to stand on the hill and take that picture. You tend to be looking around for the shot. You know, you don't say, I'm standing here and that's a shot I'm going to do. You move around, you see something, you think, oh, that's really lovely, I want to get a view of that, and then I'm going to work on it. So whether you have to move further away or forward to get that shot, I don't think it's that relevant. You can make that shot even if you have to move around. And I would have said the most important thing I'd say with landscape is to get a lens that's really, really sharp. Because, I mean, landscapes are, you know, it's easy to take the view of something, but what makes a landscape stand out as being a spectacular landscape is the quality of the photography in it.
Yeah,
not necessarily, I think, just the view.
Just to come back on that though, if you're buying this is going back to what I said a little bit earlier on, perhaps, but the 50 mil is giving you the option of creating good sharp images with a vast vast aperture range. Whereas, as what you're talking about there is, you know, if you stuff yourself with a 4.5 to 5.6 or a 4.5 to 6.3 lens, which is going to be crystal sharp when you do your f/11 stuff and you're going to take your landscapes, that has limited your creativity straight away. So if you've got a set amount of money, you'd be thinking about a balance on creativity for the future and something that will fit your landscapes as well as.
Yeah.
I'm trying to add to what you're saying there, not disagreeing. Yeah.
No, but that's what I'm saying. Whereas I would have said, it's literally a toss of a coin. It's you'd go with what Chris was saying about getting forcing yourself to actually go and take, you know, be creative, because you've got to move into this environment. You've got to create the picture. And there's nothing that makes me any lazier than having a zoom lens. Mm-hmm. If I've got something that goes up to 300 mil, I could go on holiday and not move from the spot I am, and I could take 30 pictures and go, right, that's it, I don't have to take the camera out again, because that's covered all the views I'm going to need to bother with for this whole trip. And I know that makes me lazy, and I know it makes me a bad photographer. It's also various things. I mean, I like doing sort of, you know, you climb up a mountain and there's a little babbling brook and you've got the waterfall and you've got things like that. To me, it's really important to be able to have the two ends of the spectrum. You need to be able to have the pin sharp, you catch the droplet of the water in the air and freeze it in time and it's pin sharp. And you also need the exposure that means you've got a flowing rush of water where you can't even really see the water. It's like a smoke effect. And you need a lens with that ability to be able to do a sharp version from both ends on the same lens. So personally, I'd go for something that I'd go for a 50 mil because you're on a crop. Don't buy the crop. Don't buy it. It's a Canon, so I don't know what. I call it DX, but you call it something else.
Yeah, yeah.
I would buy a 50 mil that comes out to be, what, about 75, 80. And I'd buy something that goes down to 1.8 and goes all the way up as far as it can go. Because also remembering, when you're using these zoom lenses, you can't use the full aperture. If you're fully zoomed out, you only get one end of the aperture. If you're fully, you know, back as far as it goes, you can't use the other end of the aperture. If you've got a 50 mil, which will operate as a 75 or 85 or somewhere around there, that you can actually go from 1.8, if you're better, 1.4, but 1.8 all the way up to the top, then I would go with that because of, you might not get the easiest shots, but every shot you get is going to be your shot. It's going to be the best shot, and you're going to be in there. And one of the things about the environment when you're taking a picture of it is to be part of it, to feel it. You're not going to miss the shot if you walk around the other side of that tree and have a look. You're going to get a better shot for it.
Yeah, so, I don't know what you guys think about this. I seem to look at the 50 mil as being almost like my Linus lens. You know, it's the blanket. It's the blanket I carry around with me because I know I can fall back to it, and I know I'll take great shots with it. One of the guys at Apple that I speak to on Twitter, he's just bought himself a pancake lens, the 40 mil one, and he said, you know, great lens, it's on its way. I'm really excited about getting it. And I said, well, I find the travel on it for video a little bit, and for manual focus, a little bit unintuitive. It never feels right. It never turns as fast as I expect it to. And also, it's great to put on when you just want that slightly wider field of view than you're getting with the 50 mil. And at 2.8, it's great, gives you great depth of field, you've got loads to play with artistically. But it's £260, whereas the 50 mil isn't. And if you said to me, right, which one of those two lenses would you prefer to use, Ewan? I'll go to the 50 mil every time. And it's not because of the f1.8, and it's not because it's 50 mil. It's my Linus lens. It's the one that I put on the camera and I know I'm going to get a good result with. And the other one, I get good results with it, but I don't like using it as much. I don't find it as nice to use. I don't find it as intuitive to use. And I guess, Alex, for you, you know, you've got a lens that you regularly put on the front when you go to set up to do a portrait, and you do it because it's the lens you feel most comfortable with.
And it's also the lens I know I'm not going to get any softness on the edges.
Yeah.
But it's also the lens, when I want to do something really arty-farty because I'm really bored, it's got a really good macro built in. You know, because the one I use most of the time is a 60 mil, right? It's a 60 mil 1.8, I think. It might be a 1.4. I think it's 1.8. But it's got a brilliant macro. And I can stick that on my camera, unless it's a physically too difficult for me to normally get far enough away from what I want to photograph. Because sometimes I'm constrained by, I've got to shoot down on something. And if I'm using that and it's too large, I can go up on my tripod to 20 feet high, but I don't feel very comfortable standing up there on some ledge taking it. So I'm actually always really depressed that I've got, oh no, I've got to go and stick a different lens on. Because a Linus lens is exactly the right word. But also, if you go with this 60 mil, 50 mil, 1.8, make sure you get one with a decent macro. Because we're talking about a price where you can get one for 200, 250 quid that's going to do that brilliantly. So when you're sitting there and you've got a beautiful flower in front of you, you'll be able to zoom in and you may be able to macro on the stamen and things like that. You're not going to be able to do that with a 35 to 200 mil lens.
Yeah.
You know, it does everything for you, and it's use it. Learn how to take pictures because you've got it.
I've had people that have been, I've been working on open jobs at airports and that kind of thing. People have come up to me and said, oh, blimey, is that all you've got? And you're like, what, my 50 mil lens? They go, yeah. God, I had one of those, 2 years ago, 3 years ago. Yeah, but the difference is this lens has paid for itself 4,000 times over. No exaggeration, it's paid for itself 4,000 times over. who's the stupid ass now?
Yeah. And the fact that they're not going anywhere, they're not at the airport because they're about to go and get paid to take photographs.
Scoff all your light, mate. Go back to cleaning windows.
Don't worry about it.
Right. That's the end of the questions. We only had two this week. If you'd like to send us a question, send it to britishtechnetwork@gmail.com and we'll read it out and we'll do our best to answer it. Whether it's absolutely accurately correct or not, we'll try, but it's up to you. Send it in, we'll answer them, promise you. We're getting more and more coming in now, but we only got two this week. So we need more next week. Please send them in if you possibly can. Also, we've got the European Podcast Awards. If you go to our webpage, and I promise it's going up this weekend, there's a banner there. You click on the photo show and you can vote for us and you can make us European Podcast of the Year. Man, that'd be nice. Then we'll have an award and then we'll be unbearable. Absolutely unbearable.
He's more than we are ready.
And this podcast is brought to you by UK2.net. They look after us immensely. They've got £1 domains at the moment for .co.uk. If you want a .co.uk domain name, then all you have to do is go to our webpage, click on the link through to UK2. You must use that link through, otherwise we don't get the kudos for sending you. And then use our offer code, and it'll only cost you 80p. Yes. Even though they've done a wacky deal to give you a £1 domain, you still get 20p off with ours.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Woo-wee!
Unbelievable. There's going to be... about 1,000 next week, I think, and then that's it. So they did 4,000 last week, 2,000 this week, and 1,000 next week. So if you want a .co.uk, go to UK too, because we love them. They love us. It's kind of a loving, it's a hug thing. Yeah. Where can we get a hold of you then, Mr. Forsman? You'll be touring Chicago in the near few minutes. If you're listening in Chicago, get out there and watch Forsman cruising around in a laser-guided car.
Yeah, I don't know if we have many listeners from Chicago too, but I'll be at Apt Electronics tomorrow in Glenview.
Signing things.
Maybe.
That's his Saturday job.
Bring your boobs and he'll sign them.
Yeah, I can do that too. But we'll have some people from WGN and Chicago Tribune and stuff out there, and we're going to preview like all the hot gadgets for the holiday season. So iPad Mini and Nexus 7 and Lord knows what else.
Tweet that out, boy, and I'll retweet it so you can get someone out there. And Alex, where can we get you, mate?
I'm here. I'm on Alex G Fox on Twitter. And yeah, that's it. Sorry, I was going to be witty, but it just didn't happen. I'm very sorry.
It's all right, mate. Don't worry about it. I'm at Ewan Rankin. Kevin is getting his audio system sorted out after last week's little bit of a debacle, but he'll be back, don't worry. And we're coming up with the Mac Show in 30 minutes time. If you're watching live, come back. Mr. Green's joining us for the first time in a while.
Holy moly,
he's put down his project and he's gonna be here taking the piss out of the Apple news
project. Is that what he calls it now?
See you next week. Thanks for listening. Bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting.